I'm Deborah Roberts, professor of classics at the Haverford of today.
And Brett Mulligan, also professor of classics. And we're looking over the contents of this collection, and I'm struck by some significant differences from the way that we teach classics today and the position that classics has in the curriculum and in society generally, but also some of the continuities when we look at the letter to the Board of Managers. I note that the appeal to the practicality of the classics, which might sound strange, but in many ways we often will hear references to that in modern times too. You have that people who take Latin are
good for the SATs.
Good for the SATs and score highest on the MCATs.
Helpful in medical school.
Exactly. Yes. And we see a similar language here about this is the best preparation for diligent habits and habits of mind. It's particularly striking to see the appeal to practicality so early, when most often in the 19th century you had an appeal to the moral authority of the classics and the moral authority of the classical authors as examples of good and bad behavior, and so an appeal to moral education. But in the Quaker context, and we have here the letter of Daniel Smith, the concern about the potential corrosive aspects of the classics and classical mythology, and the language that appears also in the letter to the Board of Managers about the heathens and their superstitions. And so it's rather remarkable to see them shunning the typical ways that a proponent would go about supporting the classics in favor of practicality, that we don't have to deal with on a moral plane. It would be training for a variety of whatever pursuits one goes into, and we see Daniel Smith referring to that.
We could note also the address of the managers of the school to the friends of the institution, that there is talk about the literary value of the classical texts, although not exactly in the terms in which we'd put this now. I mean, here the idea is that because these are among the earliest of literary texts in the Western tradition, they have a freshness, a vigor, and an originality in their composition which place them in the first rank. And only after that does the writer turn to the fear that they're tainted with the impurity of heathen superstition. But I think it's interesting the defense that the person then goes on to, which is that if you're not reading the Bible, you're going to find that problem essentially everywhere, and that the remedy against that is not avoiding reading the classical texts, but inculcating a kind of knowledge and principles which will apparently defend you against the results of these superstitions. And I think there are a couple of things that are interesting here. One is the clear reference to the college's motto, inculcation of a better knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's the Melior Doctrina the motto refers to. But there is also a kind of analogous issue nowadays in that looking back on the classical texts, we can see many places at which people are disturbed by the political or social attitudes that we find in those texts. Mm-hmm. But again, our inclination would be not to say, let's not read this author because of the way, for example, he treats women, but rather let's read this author in the context of a kind of a self-conscious understanding of the issues. And do you think the selection of texts that we see them reading in the letters reflects some of the kinds of concerns we're seeing here?
Yeah, we have letters from some of the early teachers who refer to exactly what they read and how much they read, and so we can know exactly how many lines of Euripides' Medea they read or what books or what sections of Livy's histories. And in there we do see a focus on the political and a focus on, actually really just a focus on the political, mm-hmm. with the exception of Euripides' Medea, which seems to be a bit of an anomaly. Everything else
is
political.
Everything else is political or moral. Horace is often read, mm-hmm. as an mm-hmm. educative force.
So the histories of Greece and Thucydides, history of Rome in Livy, and then historical mm-hmm. speeches by Cicero and Demosthenes. Mm-hmm. The Philippics in both cases.
Yeah. Now, that is, the Medea is a curiosity there. I mean, now clearly they seem to have had a fairly broad collection of classical texts. We're looking here at several books, and we can see a couple small volumes of Greek tragedy and a volume of Aristotle that belong to a general collection of Greek texts that they had, although they seem not necessarily to have been actually having their students read all of these. Presumably, the idea was that a library ought to have a complete collection of the basic classical texts in what would have been in those days a somewhat inexpensive mm-hmm. little portable volume. What I find most striking among the books here are the volumes of Juvenal and Petronius. Petronius in Latin, Juvenal in a very early 19th century translation. And the reason I find this curious is that both of these texts are noteworthy for obscene content, not throughout the entirety of the text, but in some very well-known places, which made them in many times and in many places had them regarded as seriously problematic texts, particularly for young people. Here they are in the Haverford Library among the Friends. Is it the case that the Friends were so busy worrying about heathen superstition that they didn't bother to really look at other features of these texts? Were they just assuming that if they didn't assign these, the students wouldn't read them? It's a little bit of a puzzle to me, actually.
Yeah, puzzle to me, too.
I mean, we could say about the Juvenal that this is a translation that was done early enough in the 19th century that attitudes that we think of as sort of late 18th century, early 19th century are still prevalent. The later 19th century and Victorian intensification of difficulty with obscenity hasn't really set in yet. But again, I would have expected that in a Quaker context, which is so protective of its young men. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're coming to Haverford partly so they won't go somewhere like Princeton. I'm still very interested that we're finding Petronius and Juvenal there.
And with no attempt to conceal the racier passages from
right.
what we've been
able
this
to say. This is a complete translation of Juvenal and a complete Latin text of Petronius given by Thomas Cope to the college. I would be very interested to know, you know, why he had it and what he was thinking. Well, we've just been told that students could get demerits for possessing copies of Shakespeare or for reading novels. One can only imagine how many demerits right. they would get if they actually took Petronius or Juvenal out of the library. We do now teach both Petronius and Juvenal at Haverford and Bryn Mawr.